wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, we're actually going to be talking a lot of streaming television on this episode.
Yeah.
But I did want to start... Let me say this. Those long-time listeners will know that we do a lot of technology stuff on this show, but I am no by any means a technophile. I have a computer and a phone. You are far more hip to the new technology than I am. You have been the expert in Google Homes and Amazon Echoes and the whole nine yards. But I did find it interesting the other day. I read something a little while ago that Apple had introduced a credit card.
Right.
And I couldn't quite
I'm not sure it's really a credit card exactly. It's so they introduced, so they've had Apple Pay for a while, right?
Yes.
Like, so on your phones, you can wave it or whatever.
Which I
do
not
scan
use.
Something or something. But, you know, Google Pay, it's kind of funny. Those two have.
I don't use any of those things. I download.
Samsung tried one, didn't really take.
Like, I don't mean to cut you off. I will download tickets to things and scan that, but I will never scan something.
Well, you will eventually. When you say
will
you
I?
Never. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
You know, like, listen, you said you'd never get a regular, you know, phone, you know, a. You just wanted a flip phone for forever.
Okay.
And you broke down, and then, you know, you say, you've had a lot of nevers before.
Do you ever pay for anything directly from your phone, where you just scan the phone and it's taking your money out?
No.
Without using, again, I mean, I do, I charge parking through an app, but that's set up on PayPal. I do lots of stuff like that. No, but I always feel that with the Apple Pay and this card pay, they removed the middleman. Am I incorrect when I say that? Everything else is set up to do through PayPal. But with the Apple thing, and you talked about the Samsung stuff there, it's almost like your phone functions as your debit card. Is that a true statement?
Well, it functions that way, but I don't know if they've actually removed a middleman.
Okay.
I can't remember if at the end of the day that's processing those payments through something like PayPal, which is its own drafts from checking accounts and deposits into checking accounts and hold money there, or if it's just using the credit card system.
Okay.
It makes a difference just because of fees and things. I'm going to guess they aren't using credit. Oddly enough, people I deal with professionally would know more about this than I do, but these are, I imagine if Apple was fully circumventing the bank and credit card system, there'd be more resistance out there.
Okay.
Could be wrong. But anyway, but that does lead into, like, for example, this card. So you have Apple Pay on your phone. You can go put it up on the whatever the thing that says, you know, touch your phone here.
Right.
I noticed, by the way, there's a lot more of that in England than there is in the States, or at least it seems to be featured differently. It just
really
jumped out at me more at the shops. But they also offer, when you get that account, you can now get a branded credit card, and it's like a titanium card.
Yes.
That has your name embossed in it. And I don't think it has a traditional magnetic strip. I think it has an RFID or chip type of setup there. And what they seem to say is the intention isn't really that you really have to use it. It's supposed to be a backup for places that don't take Apple Pay in its native form
on
your
phone.
Right. That you would put this into the card. So it wouldn't surprise me. So that might explain, like, so if in fact Apple Pay relies on different systems, maybe this is the concession they make. They have to use the credit card system to kind of piggyback on a credit card system.
So for those of you that are even further behind the curve than I am, this is not like just a credit card in the way that, hey, get a credit card with your favorite team on it or something. It's not like that.
It's not like a branded Apple card.
It's
independent. I don't think it's got any Visa
system
or MasterCard logo on it, or how it, I'm not exactly sure.
And of course, the internet had a lot of fun when it was announced, because apparently there was a whole load of...
Well, this is a real kicker, right? Like, so they, well, you mean about it being a fancy card, you mean?
About it being a fancy card, and the fact that because of basically, you know, you talked about titanium and nomadic magnetic strip, there are all kinds of, for some reason, specific instructions for its care.
So they said, the company has, and I'm reading off of a Guardian article that you had sent over, but it was in all the papers.
Yes.
The company has warned, in very short blurbs, because it's just basically a joke. Companies warn cardholders that they'll have to take special care of the new credit card. Leather wallets, loose change, and Levi's jeans. I don't know why they say Levi's.
Yeah, Levi's. I saw that. Levi's jeans.
Pose a danger, for instance. Nor should the Apple card come into contact with other credit cards for fear of scratching the finish. There's things about it maybe would get discolored by being in your pockets. And, you know, if it got scratched, it might work. There'd be permanent, you know, don't let it touch another credit card or potentially abrasive objects like coins or keys. Now, before we talk about like the reaction of the world to this thing, it's a titanium credit card, right? I mean, isn't the whole thing with titanium, is it stronger or is it just lighter? I mean,
it is.
It certainly sounds like it's supposed to be stronger.
Titanium is a combination of strength and light ratio, but that is not. But when you say stronger, it is not more durable.
It should be more durable than a piece of plastic, right?
No, but I mean, it's not more durable in terms of being scratch resistant and this type of thing. It is lighter and it is stronger in terms of it will be a lot harder to break the credit card. But to your point, if you drag your keys over it, it is not some sort of scratch resistant type material.
Yeah, although I'm sure it's in like, and I know this, we're now looking, sure it's not shiny. Oddly enough, none of these things seem to have a picture of it.
Yeah, well, no, I saw one somewhere.
It's like off on a broadcast somewhere.
Yeah,
but it's clearly gonna be a matte finish.
Yes,
right. I don't know. You know, this just seems silly. And my guess is it isn't really that vulnerable to things like with discoloration, like from a pair of jeans. What does that mean? Like,
well, I
mean,
no, it's not from a pair of Levi jeans.
Well, yeah. Or leather.
Levi's are probably not thrilled that they got called out. Do you know what I mean? They're probably not sitting there going, oh, great. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
And yet no one put the boot into Wrangler or Lee jeans or any of those.
Yeah. So, you know, you can imagine in this, it is one of the better parts of Twitter and social media,
yes,
is that you get an opportunity for the jokes to come out,
right?
And some of them are junk, but some of them are quite good. And if you allow somebody else to filter that out, so you don't have to look at the, you know, it shows up in articles. And it's
pretty
funny.
It was a meme
festival, you know. Yes. So people like Mark Cormier, whoever, I don't know if he's a famous person, don't put the Apple Card in your wallet, hang in a floating glass in a dimly lit year-round 70-degree humidity-controlled location. No flash photography, please. And then people were saying, you know, like they were like little pictures
little
of
huggies,
Knit Cozies,
oh, yeah,
that,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
they'd,
yeah,
be selling on, you know, for only $300, you can get this thing to, you know, card socks, Apple card, yes, socks. They have a picture for $99. Obviously not true products, at least not yet. But I mean, first, like I said, I bet you it's not that big a deal. It's just you put a bunch of warnings on things because, you know, somebody's going to get upset when they're titanium.
When it does happen.
Thing. But the whole idea is that you're never really going to have to use it, you know, so it's almost like a keepsake.
I have a serious question. What was the cost of obtaining?
Oh, I forgot the two-step client cleaning process, apparently, which you're not supposed to use regular cleaning stuff. It's like some sort of alcohol and distilled water or some combination there. Yeah. You like polish it up to make it look good.
It's like you're not supposed to use certain things on your screen, but I go ahead and do that anyway because what do I care?
Right, exactly.
How much does the card? I'm trying to see where
I don't
you.
Know,
and that was the thing. So it was something that you could just get for being an Apple account holder. There's got
to
be a way.
You have to have an Apple Pay account, which means you have to tie it into your
bank.
But
there's got to be some way that they're making money off it.
They make money off the movement of the
funds. No, but what I'm saying is, look.
How does PayPal make money?
Yeah, that's true. But Apple ultimately are in a...
Venmo. Do you have Venmo yet?
I do not have Venmo. I have PayPal.
The younger people have Venmo.
Venmo and PayPal
are the same company, and it annoys me that they won't let you use your PayPal account to like just do Venmo stuff.
Venmo is young,
Venmo's
modern
most
people,
like, and they like it's supposed to be where you, yeah, you can social network there, and like so your friends, yes, can see, or maybe the whole world if you'd like. I paid so and so whatever it was for pizza, you know. And then there's a one from the banks.
There's
got
another
together
one
called Zelle. One Bank of America. Well, all the big banks said, well, we want something like that where people can easily transfer money around. I have them all now because somebody along the way is asked to use one or the other of them.
Venmo is the hip one. Venmo is the Snapchat of moving money. PayPal is the Facebook of moving money. Because,
yeah,
the whole joke is Facebook is now for people of intertone and middle age like ourselves, even though you don't do Facebook,
even,
but I
even
do.
Older age. I'm not sure it's for middle age people anymore.
I just felt, though, that when Apple brought this out, and I do like Apple products. I mean, you know, we've had this discussion before, and there is that sort of Ford versus Chevy notion about it. You are completely a non-Apple guy, and I like Apple products, but I'm not some fanatic who feels he needs to get everything the first time. I'm a couple of years behind on the phones in that I pick my phone not because it's the latest Apple one, but because I want the one that's the right size for my lifestyle. So I'm probably slightly a bit of an outlier. I still have a generation one iPad, because I had to actually go online.
That's covered like duct tape and things.
Yes,
holding it together.
I had to actually get online a charger because it's the different charger connection. That's how old it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not some sort of deranged. I've said before, you can get them from eBay, used ones, or throw them out. I've said before that I'm a late adopter, if I'm an adopter at all. But I'm sitting there looking at the Apple credit card thinking, well, I don't need that. And also for Apple, which I know is a company that there is a sense that everyone else technology-wise has caught up with them. They are no longer groundbreaking in the way that they used to be. I think everyone would say that they were the first mass-produced MP3 player. You know, for the longest time, the iPhone was the one that everyone else copied. The iPad was the one that everyone else copied. iPod.
Yeah.
But I feel like the credit card is, to me, confirmation that they have now jumped the shark and are just trying to be different. I don't feel that this product is, because it was launched in classic Apple fashion, and they all
realize you're confusing the card, the titanium story, with Apple Pay. Apple Pay itself, as a method of payment, is a huge success.
I'm not saying it's not a success. I'm just saying it felt like this big announcement this week with the people in the black turtlenecks and the PowerPoint presentation behind and how it was going to transform your lifestyle. I sort of read about it, and I'm like, yeah, no, this actually isn't a groundbreaking product in the way that the iPad and the iPod and the iPhone.
I mean, the concept of paying with your phone is rebellious. You don't think paying with your phone is...
They've already done that.
I'm talking about this card. They announced this, but I don't think they cared if it was big. It only became big because of people saying it was tough to clean.
Apple do anything like this without thinking that it's big. That's Apple. Apple ties into your cards or accounts.
I don't know why.
That's always been their strategy, is to create something that you believe is hot and everyone else wants.
You know, one reason it's so big in some places, in like London, for example, you don't need an Oyster card anymore. You could just use your phone.
Okay.
So people have that much less. I mean, like, I assume the idea is to get it down to the point where you don't even need a wallet anymore. So it's not two pockets you have anything in. You just got your phone, and that's it. That's how you pay. That's how you probably identify yourself. I mean,
and to be fair, they're going to get to a stage where you just have it in your pocket and you can just walk through things. That's right. Like, you know.
Yeah, just notice you.
Yeah.
And then at that point, then they'll go to, like, the retinal scan and all that other stuff. That
we will be implanted
stuff in the minority report.
Yeah, it will be implanted in his at birth. Because you can do that to your
not even implant. You know, just use a part of your body.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but why implant something when we've got all kinds of identifying things on ourselves?
You can stick a chip in your dog. So,
you know, there's that whole, like, all the face things. They can just, like, figure out the proportions amongst different parts of your face. Your face is basically like a fingerprint because it's got the same thing going on.
You did send me something. I don't know if you want to get into that.
No, that's all about face blindness. It's a great article, and so you should read it before we actually talk about it. Not that you wouldn't normally just discuss something without reading it, but go ahead and read this one before we talk.
You can put a chip in your dog. And I must say, I couldn't decide. Here's a Hobson. I'm going to give you a quick Hobson's choice.
You can really put a chip in anything.
I had a quick Hobson's choice.
You put a chip in a giraffe.
So my dog is nearly...
It's harder to read. You have to reach way up there at the shoulders.
My dog is nearly 5 years of age. He does not wear a collar.
She.
With a tag. Yes. It was a dog. And I keep thinking it probably needs to have one. But then I also realized that if you introduce this to your dog later in the life, it's going to be a hassle, and he's going to be like, why am I suddenly wearing this thing?
That dog is not
So I couldn't
anything.
Decide whether I should do that or inflict him to the pain of having a chip insertion.
Oh,
both
wait.
Events
oh,
involving pain and
stuff.
Hassle. Yeah. So there you go.
Well, there's you should do that.
Choice. So I just didn't do anything.
Just throw the...
if he runs off, he runs off.
We just heard a story in the family about somebody who, like, found a dog running down the street with its leash on.
Oh, okay.
And like they went and looked at the tags, and the person was far enough away that they had to get in their car and drive the dog back to wherever it came from.
Oh, wow.
So that was a real escape artist with a leash on.
The last thing you need is to own a dog like that that's got hold of your Apple card, because who knows how much damage he would be doing running through things.
Speaking in Apple and late to technology, and I guess in a weird way, this is all consistent with the way Apple's model, which is Apple did invent MP3 storage things. They just refined it. Apple streaming service, which leads into all of our TV topics for the day.
Right.
So Apple streaming is coming, they've always had this Apple TV thing, and they've always had videos you could play, but now they're making an effort into developing their own content, like the networks, like HBO, like Netflix.
Like everyone.
Yeah,
yes.
Like so, and Disney, we'll talk about all
these. We'll talk about that too.
So the big show that's supposedly coming out appears that's going to be their flagship that's going to try to entice everybody to come along and join is this thing called The Morning Show, which is a sitcom? I don't even know, really, but somewhere between funny and dramatic, I suppose.
What do they call it? Dramedy.
Something like that. With about a TV morning show, like Good Morning America type of thing, starring Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, and Steve Carell.
Right.
Funnily enough, is the biggest winners on Netflix streaming that people talk about, like everybody talks about their new content and, you know, getting movies. So there's less than those now is how many streams they have of The Office and Friends.
The Friends, yeah.
And like all the young people just sit there and watch these things on a binge basis who didn't all see it the first time around. So it's kind of funny that you've got both Aniston and Carell showing up in this thing. Reese Witherspoon coming off of a lot of HBO stuff that she's been doing, and I guess that's where it kind of fits in too.
I did tell you in the green room before the show that I had read a story the other week that apparently Robert De Niro is locked in a legal fight with an ex-assistant staffer who he claims embezzled up to, I think I said to you 11 million, but it might not be that much, but apparently took at least seven figures off him. And also, news reports said the assistant was guilty of spending up to 8 hours of the workday streaming Friends on Netflix.
I imagine there's a lot of assistants. That's what they do. I mean, you're sitting around. I mean, they're just hanging around to get you coffee and, you know, answer the phone.
Yeah.
It's got to be a lot of downtime.
Yeah, but again, it was ironic that yes, they were streaming Friends on Netflix. That was listed in the news reports and apparently in the court filings. Yes.
You know, one of the big things is that a lot of these shows that are on Netflix now, and Hulu for that matter, Hulu was always like a conglomeration of the different networks kind of putting their TV shows on.
I think it was very much at NBC, Time Warner.
Yeah, but now I think it's been bought out by Disney.
Oh, really?
And, you know, which of course puts it in the ABC camp. But all these places are pulling back their
Fox
content.
Camp. Remember, Disney owns Fox.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's all part of the same thing. But all these places are you sign a deal saying, okay, Netflix, you can have Friends for this long.
Right.
But it's not permanent, right?
No.
And so all these places are pulling it back.
It's equivalent of syndication.
Right. So, Netflix is worried about, people are worried for Netflix. I mean, Netflix hasn't said they're worried about it. But the thought is, you know, I don't know that they've really, do they make money or are they profit? I think they are profitable maybe now, but in any event, the concern is as these shows get pulled away that were just sort of the masses, you know, would just sit and watch, and, you know, are people going to be less likely to subscribe to it? You know,
well, I think that's the other reason why Netflix have tried to sort of get in. They have really upped their original content. They've gone that sort of movie route. In fact, movies and series, but there was, you know, there was the one, I remember watching the film with Ben Affleck and Oscar Isaac. I think it was Triple Threat or something like that I watched. And I think, because there's a lot of fuss, I think it's Netflix. They have that film coming out, the Martin Scorsese film coming out in a couple of weeks, The Irishman, that is loaded with stars, with De Niro and Joe Pesci and Harvey Keitel, and it is a who's who, and Al Pacino, I think, is in it. Everyone who's ever worked with Scorsese or had a coffee with Scorsese is in this one. It's a Netflix production, and as of the end of August, it was still unclear whether it was going to go straight to Netflix or they were going to try and release it in a few cinemas to sort of get that film thing. But I think my general point to your point was I had heard the BBC and ITV in the UK were busy launching their own streaming services because they hadn't had one. And Netflix, they'd had a deal with Netflix where Netflix had taken a lot of content that was made by the BBC and produced it on Netflix. And the BBC was sitting around going, well, why don't we just set up our own streaming service? So to your point there...
Well, that's all the places doing.
Yes, but what I'm saying is to your point there, is Netflix shortly to become a outmoded model, business model in terms of...
They appear to have more money than anything anyway, so it's not a problem. And that's the real reason that Apple can do what they're doing, which is throwing a ridiculous amount of money at a show. And I'm looking here, and it's really a drama, because they're talking about Steve Carell being somebody accused of sexual harassment.
Oh, okay.
Things,
yes,
and
not
Aniston
funny.
Playing an aging anchor, and Witherspoon is a reporter who's losing sight of her identity. So this sounds like a drama.
Basically, it's a Today Show.
It sounds a little bit like, although it says it's specifically saying it's not like an Aaron Sorkin newsroom thing. you know, which was that series he came out not too long ago, which was very Aaron Sorkin-y. That's going on. But the money they're spending for two seasons, and I couldn't find how many episodes there are, but let's assume there's like 8 or 10
between
most.
8 and 13. Yeah, isn't it?
Nobody's making there. 13 episodes of streaming shows anymore. $300 million. And that it's basically more per season than HBO is spending on Game of Thrones, which had a tremendous amount of on-site filming and tons of computer graphics and tons of actors, you know, like a huge
The reason I had leaned back in my chair and was looking at the ceiling with my hands over my head, because I was desperately, when you said this TV show is costing $300 million, I immediately was trying to transfer it into the Atlantic Voice Preview summer movie guide lingo in terms of, will it make money?
You can't tell.
I mean, this in all seriousness. $300 million, I am trying to think back over the films we reviewed, and if you haven't listened, go back to May and June, and it has our summer movie preview. $300 million is the equivalent of, that is still a major league, big time movie budget.
That's people talking, and there's no lasers, no special effects, no on-site, no location filming.
we are comparing not necessarily apples and oranges but apples and pears, but still that's an awful lot of money for a TV show where you're not selling direct advertising and that type of thing. I mean, my question is, how did they get their money back?
Doesn't matter. They don't get their money back in this sense. I mean, like, the thing is, you're Apple. You have just a huge amount of money sitting there doing nothing. Okay. You have to put it into stuff. So you're going to put it into this thing. The idea, and this is where we're going to get to with these different things, because we should, you know, we'll mention the NBC's got its own thing. CBS has had its own thing coming out with it. Like, you pay an extra on top to get different CBS shows, like the Star Trek thing.
CBS have gone hard. They're going, we're going to use the Trekkies.
I mean, we're not even matching the Amazon stuff. The Amazon Prime Video, which is they have their own shows that they've done, like Homecoming, which we'll mention here in a second. But you're getting me all off my topic. First topic, the amount of money being spent, $300 million. Why is it paying so much? Well, it's because they're paying each one of those main three actors. I mentioned $1.25 million per episode. Steph had heard this before, right?
And anytime you want, I actually then, when we were having this discussion and preparing for the show, I then went and I just took a minute just trying to Google what other equivalent movie stars have made from their experience. So George Clooney is involved in Hulu's Catch 22. He's also a producer and a director, and that is a this year production. He apparently is getting in the region of $1 million an episode. We did mention Amazon Prime. Julia Roberts starred in their series Homeland, which I think Homecoming, which I think was now 18 months old. She got $600,000 an episode.
That was sort of a mini series, though. I don't think they're coming back.
And then I also, just for giggles, to just get a sense of the market, I Googled what Kevin Spacey was believed to make when he starred in House of Cards, which of course is famous because it is ultimately the first show that everyone talks about, oh my gosh, I should get my streaming service for that show and binge watch it. He made $500,000 an episode. And again, we're comparing apples to pears. And then just for giggles, I Googled what Julie Louise Dreyfus makes
Julia
for Veep.
Louis Dreyfus.
Yeah,
Louise?
That's what I said.
Louise?
Whatever.
That's like an old lady's name.
I'm sorry. What she makes, what Elaine from Seinfeld makes for being on Veep, which is now, in a strange way, a very traditional, old-fashioned model of, yes, it's on a channel and it comes out once a week. But she's won a bag of Emmys for playing that character. She was getting $250,000 an episode right now. So now I appreciate that all this changes depending who you are. But to your original point,
well, as long as you're filling out the data, I just briefly checked while you were going on for a while.
I was sharing with the listener.
You know, Friends, the original, when they started, they were getting $75,000. Actually, by season three, they were making $75,000 an episode. Huh. By seasons 9 and 10, each one of them was getting $1 million an episode. So basically, so this eclipse now. Now, obviously, there's a time difference, so like the 1,000,005 is maybe not.
So Friends actually eclipses.
Yeah, I think that was that made Aniston and Cox and Kudrow, in particular, the highest paid TV actresses of all time. Right. But
which means it's not about the money; they're doing it for art.
You know, no, but realize the reach of Friends when it was on TV.
Yeah, it's all
still
over
beats all of these streaming shows. You know, the streaming shows get a lot of talk and it's sort of interesting. Yes. But other than Game of Thrones, like these shows, even House of Cards doesn't have the viewership that Friends had when it was on TV.
There are lost tribes in the Pacific that have seen the episode of Friends where the dude gets the turkey stuck on his head, or whatever that one is. Right. I mean.
So before we kind of diverge into things. The ultimate point and the reason that Apple, Amazon, Netflix has got a good bunch of money is, I understand, although it's a little bit more cryptic, Disney for sure, and we'll mention a couple of shows they're working on. They throw this money is you just want to be the ones who are standing at the end of the dance.
Let me ask
and
you
it's like basically it's you're never going to make more people off of that show. And it's not even how you do it because you don't sell ads on a per show basis like you could for TV shows where you would know, OK, I made this much money off of this show. You know, you could line up the two things side by side and you might take one that's a loser. Maybe, you know, you're putting together a night and so everything plays off a little bit. But it's very this is a much tougher analysis. It's how do you do these shows? There's no public TV ratings, you know, like publicized. You know what your number of streams are. How many more Apple streaming subscriptions have you sold because of this show is alchemy. You know, like what's to figure out what it is. And moreover, if the point is, even if I did that, I don't care because I'm playing a long game that 10 years from now, I want to be in that game. And this stuff, these streaming services are going to fall out. Nobody's going to be getting eight different streaming services into their house and paying 10 or 12 bucks for each one of those just to get a couple of shows from each. I mean, like...
Well, to be fair, though, I think some people might. They'll dump cable and do that. But you are correct. Not enough people are going to do it to the amount where it becomes a business model. It's interesting. I go to Price Club.
Which isn't to say even that model will survive, like when we're all done, they're all going to be ones that are doing 10 or 15. You know, they may all realize it makes more sense to charge people $3 to watch a show. And people drop $3 to watch an hour-long show anytime, you know, just because people will be like, what the heck? I pay $12 for a movie anyway. I got a huge screen in my house. Or I pay even renting the movie from home streaming-wise is like $7 or $8. If you tell me – if I got HBO and HBO was to say – I don't have HBO, but I just want to watch each of the episodes of Game of Thrones per play, and it was $3. Tons of people do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, so that maybe that's the model that, you know, 10 years will have come back to something like that where you're doing everything like a la carte down to the show, and it doesn't matter which service you put it on. And so now they don't – the fact that all these guys have to maintain – well, I guess they all probably contract out, but it's an infrastructure for doing all this stuff.
Do you believe, to your point – I'm going to ask you for your opinion now. Because, and we've had this discussion before, I continue to pay for Sirius in my car. But I, you know, again, I'm late to the party with it. Sirius is 15, 20 years old, perhaps. Yeah. I don't know. But when satellite radio first came out, there was Sirius and there was it XM?
Yeah, they're the same company.
And there were two, but they're the same company now. But when they first started, they were competitors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe, are you of the opinion, so now I understand we're in a different medium, but here we are a decade and a half later, and there are streaming companies everywhere. Do you believe you might get to a stage where these people might start combining?
No. Well, they're busy. I mean, they were combined. You know, you had Hulu. You had everything going.
But combining
because
again.
Realize the difference in this business is – in this area is – XM and Sirius were carriers. They're radio, you know, they could put out a bunch of different radio stations, but they didn't produce any content.
Okay.
I mean, technically, I guess they had like, oh, come in the studio, play something acoustic, but they didn't produce the content.
Yeah, okay.
The whole thing here is this vertical. I can't even, like, they talk about verticals. There's a show called Succession, which we're going to mention before or later on again. You don't know.
They stand at HBO, but that's HBO. No, I know it's a standard.
But they were talking about a technical, like a. It's a company called Vault. It's obviously fictional, Valter, but it's like Gawker Media. It's an online media company, right? And they're talking about media verticals, and I think that must be what it is. Is you produce it, you put it out there. You know, everything is direct line. You're not using anybody in between. But anyway, I digress. But these companies, the Apple, they're not planning on making money by being Sirius or XM, where they carry somebody else's stuff. They're making the money by doing it all, like, you know, being the source of delivery. And in fact, like I said, I think they all, even though, you know, you go to a different spot on your apps to watch HBO Go right. versus Amazon, it would not be at all surprising if behind the scenes, the folks running the systems that deliver that content over the internet are very overlapping.
Well, I mean, that's the case right now with cable. So I have Xfinity, right. one of the big ones in America.
Well, but they now, but Xfinity, of course, is part of the what's their corporate parent? Are they in CBS?
No, the Xfinity or NBC and whatever NBC is, okay, General right, G right. and everything. But what I'm saying is, through my Xfinity, I'm able to hook up whatever ones I pay for. So I don't, it doesn't change my bill, but Xfinity have kindly said, yes, you can watch Apple stuff and you can watch Netflix stuff all through your Xfinity porthole. So that's to your point there about, you know, everything.
Right, right now, though, yeah. like, you know, that's what's going to happen. Now, that's the thing is that when we say, like, okay, you know, are they going to consolidate? The studios aren't going to consolidate. I mean, there'll probably be somebody buying somebody, just like Disney bought Fox and things right. like that. And maybe there will be a certain amount of that, but it's not like they're going to be SiriusXM. You're going to have one place putting out content. There's always going to be somebody putting out more content. Will the channels, you know, meaning, and I don't mean by the TV channels, I mean the routes through which stuff is delivered to your house consolidate? They ought to. Like, I always thought, like, I mean, if somebody could just develop a thing over the top that would find it all, and I think some companies are headed there. For example, we recently ended up with a small but relatively recent purchased Samsung TV. And okay. we have a great, beautiful Samsung TV.
One yeah, of the last
plasma
that.
Things.
Yeah.
And it, you know, has the smart TV hubs and right. things like that. And
3D.
So you can play your Netflix.
Yeah.
Well, this thing has it beat by a mile. It has every, like, I was trying to do something with Google. I was watching, because it's such a small TV, I took it on the back porch today so I could watch Chelsea at 7:30 yeah. in the yeah. morning. And I was using the Google streaming Chromecast thing.
Okay.
And I didn't realize until after I moved it and was putting it into the room that we planned to use it, and we didn't plan to get a cable box, that it has an NBC Sports app. It has an ESPN app. All that stuff is built into the TV itself. And so you can just, with your remote, click over to the next, to Netflix, to Hulu, to Amazon. Like, it doesn't have any of that. Buy it, like, you know,
yeah.
the Amazon Fire Stick won't carry the Google stuff,
right.
at least not without effort. The Google Chromecast won't really carry the Amazon thing without a bunch of headaches kind of thing. So this has to shake out some way. People aren't going to all spend their time. I mean, put it this way. You'll choose a TV that can make the technology, or you choose whatever piece of technology that is going to grab all those things. And this thing has a search function. You can search, and it goes searching all of those sources and tells you, okay, here's one you can get it for free. Here's one you can get it for paying for $3.
There's other one you're going to have to pay.
Do all these things, you know.
Part of my anger with Apple, and again, I've said before, in the house we have Netflix, but I as an individual had never signed up to it. I am an Amazon Prime member, but I got into it for the shipping, and so the TV and the stuff I've always seen as a bonus. Part of my issue with Apple, because I've had Apple products for a long time, and I've that's always been my way of downloading music and video. And I've, you know they charge you for cloud space this and subscription that. I am concerned that I do not know what I've been paying for. And so now that there's these big announcements, yes, we're bringing out The Morning Show with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon and Steve Crown, Apple TV. I am slightly somewhat concerned that, do I get that for free, or am I going to have to pay for that? And that angers me about Apple, who are now pivoting into this form. What's screwing over their inattentive customer like myself, who I'm now scratching my head going, does my $100 get me this or not, or whatever?
Yeah. Well, listen, confusion works to their benefit. Same way as the
And now
fact
I've
that
said that, that's going into the computer, and I'm sure an alarm bell is going off in Silicon Valley where it says, rip off that dude.
I mean, same reason none of these places even offer you the option of getting a bill. Like, cable has a bill.
Yeah.
And cable will say, oh, we can automatically debit, but you're like, I'd like to see that bill come in, so yes. I'm reminded what it is. But when you get Netflix, there's no option of getting a monthly Netflix bill. They're just like, you have to give us an account tax. You can be debited for the year.
Yeah.
And we'll debit you again next year, or you can be debited every month, and you'll just won't even notice it because there'll be so many little line items on your thing saying $12, $14, $10, $9 taken out of your account.
I have been a Costco member, Costco, one of those big Price Club style warehouses, for 20 years. And it is only this summer when someone, again, I'm going to take this person at their word, they announced to me Costco only The reason all their stuff is so cheap is that their business model, they're only interested in selling memberships. That's where, to them, that's their profit. They're not interested in volume. Yes, sure, you make money off volume of things, but one of the reasons their prices are competitive is, as a company, their business strategy is move memberships, that's all clear profit. Because having a dude come in the door and sign up for $100 don't cost us anything.
Right, and a bunch of those people will show up twice a year.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't renewed our membership. We used to go all the time, and then I was like...
But even if they don't show up twice a year, you still made the $100.
Yeah, well, that's my point, it's like a gym membership. Gym membership is like, you know, designed to be like, well, listen, we want you to come here, but we don't want you to come here that much.
Well, that was the thing. I used to wander into Costco and see these rows and rows of stuff, and in my mind I'm thinking, yeah, because they're moving so many loaves of bread, that's how they're making money, because these deals are great. And then I'm like, I'm not suggesting they don't make money on product.
No, but what I'm saying is
their business model is about every time someone renews for $110, that's clear.
I don't know if it's the selling volume as much as it is the buying volume. In other words, like
selling to me.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying
them buying.
They're
what are you talking about?
Buying from the suppliers. Okay. Because if they can go to General Mills and be like, we want gargantuan box of cereal.
Yeah.
We're going to you'll be able to sell us huge slugs of this stuff. You can use half of the packaging because everybody's going to buy these things in the double containers. And so I think there's a couple of points. Walmart can squeeze everybody who's a supplier.
I mean, there's a couple of points there. What I'm saying is if they buy something at 57, then they're more than happy to sell it at 58.
Yeah, did you say anything and said how many memberships they have?
No, I didn't. This was just a random conversation when someone goes, they make all their money off memberships. And I'm like, really?
So it wasn't like read in a paper. This is just somebody talking about.
Oh no, this is all anecdotal.
Oh
yeah,
that's one step below our half-assed research.
Just because it's anecdotal doesn't mean it's false.
But it's lower on the
If you're not sure, email us because I'd like to know if that's a fact or not.
Yeah. Hey, a couple of things you wanted to mention before we move a little bit out of TV. Disney, you said you saw some things about Disney streaming. One of the big things
I saw something the other week. Yeah,
we've talked before about it. It's not given the wide breadth of different things that Disney has, from Snow White, G-rated fare to. I forget what the rough end of their stuff is. But through Fox and stuff, own some movie studios that are put out R-rated movies and things. So they'd have that stuff. Star Wars is somewhere in between. And then, of course, even like the type of thing you'd watch, they have Marvel, which, although they don't have Spider-Man, we can talk about Spider-Man missing now.
But, that was a big thing.
But they have that. And the Star Wars is the big thing where they had already announced one of their flagship series to get people to sign up is called the Mandalorian.
Yes, that's right.
Which is some planet that they, and so there's going to be a series based around that'll be part of the normal Star Wars universe. It'll tie into things. I'm sure they'll have Darth Vader will be on a TV set in the background.
Yeah.
But that's going to be their. But you said
they're doing an
Obi-Wan TV series with
Ewan McGregor,
big star, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not as big as Steve Carell now, but he's more artistically big.
He's Hollywood guy.
He's in some of your favorite movies.
Yes. Am I supposed to name them?
Trainspotting 1 and 2.
Trainspotting 2 is a great movie. I liked it a lot.
I did too.
So they're doing Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, so we'll of course visit that. I mean, I may have to get Disney if only to be able to be.
I know you're saying that with a smile on your face, but again, that is the tactic that they all use, is to create something.
Well, but plus Disney will have all these, especially kids. Like, just think, if Disney has every one of those Disney movies that people have been buying on DVD and everything for all these years
But I do want to say this about Disney, and maybe because they're so
Frozen
big that Disney, they're right, so big that they can afford.
Their princess thing, that's not a Pixar, is it? Frozen's Disney. Frozen's got to be Disney, yeah.
Yeah. Disney is so big they can afford to do it, but I found it interesting, to your point, they have such a massive back catalog. They easily could have written on that for a couple of years
right.
and sort of, oh, let's see how this all goes. Well, but no, they're going all the way in with, yeah, and we're going to give you new series as well.
Well, if anything, they're probably covering a gap here because, like I said, a bunch of their stuff is out with other streaming providers. They can't just turn it off.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's going to come back. So by putting in their, like, they're filling in the absence in there, but they will ultimately, this is why they stand one of the best chances of being one of the people standing at the end, you know, because they will have content. You know, it's
because they've already got,
you know, they've already done it all, you know. And, and I know NBC, when I turned on the ABC streaming, because I can't remember what network this was on.
Okay.
But they have a whole bunch of old series. One of the first pages, for whatever reason, Bionic Woman.
Oh, right.
And I was like, oh my God, the Bionic Woman. I didn't watch a whole episode.
No,
but the intro with, you know, it has the digital stuff like they had in the $6 million man where it says, you know, prior profession was a tennis pro. You know, she got
injured. Was she a tennis pro?
Was a tennis pro, but at the time when she got injured, she was a teacher.
Was she the one scratching her ass in the photo?
No. She was a teacher, and then she gets in some sort of accident, and then they rebuild her, and she becomes a bionic.
What was her accident?
It was a parachuting thing, it looked
like. That's right, skydive. That's right. Yeah. I was never really...
The other member of the household who really... When the show originally came out, was only 1 year old, so she clearly wasn't watching it first run. But I was like, so I asked, I said, you know, was this a show you would have watched? She's like, oh my God. I used to run around the house going, bee, nee, 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 like,
let me tell you something. It's a famous misquote of the sea. I've been, because again, like you, I try and watch old TV on my YouTube or on the multiple of lower TV channels that are just showing old shows all the time. So they'll bung in a whole load of ad breaks for old people's products. And I will sit down and I will watch $6 million.
And this is, I didn't have to pay for this. Like, this is just part of the thing. There's some of the channels on the streaming stuff like NBC that you just sign into your cable provider. Like, in other words, if you're already paying us for NBC on TV, we'll give you a whole bunch of other stuff over the internet. Unlike CBS, where CBS is all access thing. It's like, no, you need to pay us some more to get these shows we've been keeping in hiding.
So something else I learned this summer. I've been very active learning about the world around me from Price Club, Costco. So I was watching $6 Million Man the other week. And you know that the famous start and dum 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 dum, and then he's taken off and it's like, you know, she's breaking up and he crashes.
Yeah, it's right, rocket.
When I was a kid, I always believed that the voiceover said, gentlemen, we can rebuild him.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
What does it say?
He just says, we can rebuild him.
Oh.
Maybe thinking, wow, for the last...
Like it was that
for the last
soundtrack in your head.
Yeah, for the last indeterminate number of decades I've been alive, I'm sitting there going, I always thought...
Maybe when they brought it to England, they redubbed it with a little bit more...
No, because as kids, we used to stand around going, gentlemen, we can rebuild him. But he doesn't say gentlemen, he just says, we can rebuild him. And I was blown away this summer of indeterminate middle age going, wow, I've always misquoted... The start of $6 million.
That ties into the article about the face blindness you need to read.
Yeah, so I need to do my thing. So,
you know, speaking of those media, we've kind of covered our video TV stuff, right? Did we miss anything?
No, we didn't.
Okay. So one of the other industries that has been hugely changed by internet and technology is publications.
You sent me, and I do want to shout out the article. You sent this to me yesterday.
News and articles. And
reading like words.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, and I don't mean that facetiously.
Print media, we should say.
But this article is not print media.
No, well, this is the point where, like, this is like a second.
No, place, I understand right? what like, you're
so,
saying. Yeah,
so, you know, we've been talking for years about the problem that newspapers are having, in part because people don't want to get a paper delivered to their door. They haven't quite figured out how to turn their structure, like their existing cost structure of reporters, put it online, sell ads online, and still break even. You know, so a lot of companies have been under stress. There's really only two or three, you know,
before I get to this article. Obviously, you know, we quote The Guardian a lot because it's one of the places where I get my news because, like I say, they have a news gathering operation in the United Kingdom. They have one here in the US. They have one down in Australia. And I can click around the website. And I do not pay for their subscriber app, which gives me more access to their things. But it's...
You're always begging when you go there.
Yeah, but it is a... You know, it's got plenty for me on a daily basis, very similar to the BBC. Anyway, I was, you know, because I have... given money over the years just out of guilt type thing. Like, yeah, I'll throw you $30 because I've been reading all your stuff for free. They sent me a survey. And the survey question was, because I'd been identified as, you know, obviously as someone who reads the website and lives in the US, that I got a lot of questions about whether I would be interested in a US own sort of a US centric Guardian website. And they also asked, which I thought was interesting, would I be interested in subscribing to a print edition Guardian, but not the British version being printed in America. Right. And I just thought it was interesting to receive a survey where someone is even asking, hey, would you be interested in a newspaper? And I couldn't decide if they were just confirming the answer that was no, maybe they were. But I thought it was interesting in this day and age that people were even asking, if we were going to bring out,
it's a backdoor way of profiling you. Like, basically, they're not actually going to do anything different. We just want to know, because if you're the type of... we get a newspaper here every day. But if you're the type of person, we know not to bother marketing to you some other type. Well, we're not going to bother marketing Apple Pay to you, because if you get a paper in your driveway, you're not using
Apple Pay. You're still a dude who's wandering down to the diner in the coffee shop looking, I
read better stop at a bank and get some cash. So anyway. I couldn't imagine paying with a credit card for a breakfast, right? I mean, that's crazy.
You sent me a great article, and I want to shout it out. Really, I have it printed in front of me.
It's not really an article. It's a commentary.
Editorial, commentary, diatribe.
So it's a farewell. So Deadspin is a website that ostensibly is about sports, but it's really much more. It's had quite a few excellent, I don't mean like famous writers, but people who really had a good, sharp, incisive wit to them. Even their commentators, they had a whole system for their comment sections where you could kind of move up and be more important, and people could just have the filter. And it was based on the way people would vote them up or down.
Yes.
And so it had really was known. Like, I first found out about it when a friend told me, he said, like, listen, forget about what the articles say. The people who make comments are fantastic. Like, you know, there's people just are witty. They come up with these comments and they're great. And they get it. Like, in fact, one of the guys from Barstool Sports was originally just provided comments on Deadspin, and he ends up, you know, becoming a media personality. But anyway.
We have talked all the time about how if you go into the comments section of YouTube, war zone.
And the Washington Post, article that involves like politics, by the time you get around to like reading it online, it'll have like 3,000 comments. And like, if there are 3,000 comments on this, there's no point of any of the comments, right?
But to your point, I'd never thought about that before. But if you go to a Deadspin property and read the comments do seem to be slightly more. The comments reflect, I don't know if this is a true statement, the comments reflect how you perceive your fellow reader to be. Like, it all fits.
Yeah, whereas it's a little bit of a clue.
If you go to YouTube, you're reading some of this stuff thinking, this guy could be a serial killer.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of...
Yeah, exactly. Right,
you see what I'm saying?
Where you go to Disney and you're like, it's like, you know, somebody might have met in college would have had fun hanging out with.
Or if you go to the Post or any of these, you go, okay, here we go. Here are all the such and such dudes commenting now, whatever your issue is.
And some of them are bots. Didn't seem to be any bots that were commenting on these things. So anyway, the woman who was the most recent, top editor.
Megan Greenwell.
So she left. She's going to go become the editor of Wired Magazine, which, you know.
And we will link this article in the blog. It was... or nine pages,
and it's
good long read, but it's
as you would
great
say,
piece
putting
of journalism.
The boot in on ownership of these media properties and how foolish they're being now. Deadspin, I mean, the we could spend all day, and some people may know this already. That their history is Deadspin was a part of Gawker Media Properties.
Right.
And Gawker was like the main website, which was a lot of gossip and stories, and you know, not like TMZ exactly, but had some of that stuff.
And it was a sort of journalism that was half that was ultimately modern journalism in that it was fact and opinion
rolled up
combined.
Right. And it wasn't like
they had people who
wanted to be versions of journalists, modern version of journalists, but they wanted to
I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying unlike picking up your daily newspaper where the daily newspaper will still go, here is the news, here is your opinion section.
Yeah.
You know, the internet was much more of a blurring of those lines.
You know, they all got aggregated. Gizmodo is like the technology one.
There's
Jalopnik is the TV one.
Yeah, Jalopnik is the car.
That's what I said.
It's a whole thing.
Oh,
no, you
said
TV?
Yeah. Cars. In my head, I thought cars.
They have the Root, which is from an African-American standpoint.
Right. But they got killed. Gawker Media got killed by a lawsuit it was ostensibly on behalf of Hulk Hogan because right. they had posted some video of him.
Yes.
And, you know, whatever. But it was really bankrolled by Peter Thiel, or however you pronounce it, who was one of the original Facebook investors right. and had gajillions of money, was offended that they had outed him in certain ways on yep. his website before, decided to take his revenge by bankrolling this
by
thing.
Burying
that basically, whether they won or lost the lawsuit, it didn't matter. It was going to cost them so much that they could not afford to be a company anymore. So they fall apart. Gawker itself closes down. It's actually technically called Gizmodo Media.
Gizmodo
now.
Media, I think that's correct. Yeah.
They must have picked it because it had a G and they didn't have yeah. to change the acronyms on the door or something. But they were sold to Univision.
Univision swooped in and yeah. got them at
super
at,
cheap.
At a swan, yeah.
Univision didn't really know what to do with them. They ultimately sell off, I don't know if it's all the properties, to like one of these hedge fund setups.
Right.
And then the hedge fund people come in and they want to just basically, I mean, like her story, I mean, just I'm relating her story. I don't even know how accurate it is. I'm sure they would dispute it on the other side. Is they sure. went in there and they said that their idea was, we got to make this thing cost less, so strip it down, when like in fact its merits were based on, like it was a profitable company in yes. and of itself at some point, at least according to her. And now they're like stripping it down. And I had noticed, but I didn't realize this was all going on. But when I would go there, it's like, it's just not nearly as much interesting here anymore. You know, Drew Magri, who we talked about before, was a big writer for them. He still is writing for them, but less. And AJ DeLario was yeah. a guy who wrote for them before, but he had left for a while.
He had a lot ago. Of soul Will Leach reappearing now and again as, hey, Will
so
Leach is back
it's
to
the definitely
whatever.
Less, and I thought the comments were getting less, and people seemed to be moving away from it. This all fits into the Succession thing, because it's literally like the plot, and she talks about that in there, because this Adults in the Room title is really, like the picture on the top here is from Succession, yeah. just with a graphed in different picture in the back there, basically saying, rip it up and squeeze it down, find out how much money you can make from it. And she makes an interesting analogy.
Well, because and to say this for those of you that don't think about this is the wrong word, the attitude that a lot of these hedge funds and sort of cap, whatever the other technology is for people just throwing money into things was, just you're throwing in money to try and get money back.
Right.
And ultimately, with anything on the internet, the standard thinking is, the more people that come to the site, the more page views I get, the more money I make.
Well, right. And
so what I'm saying is, and this is the one notion now about the media on the internet is, you know, if you boil it down a certain way to make money, are you actually changing you're changing the very essence of your product?
Yeah.
Because of how right. it...
I mean, like, listen, if you've got a loyal audience and you're making money, you're doing these things, but they say, okay, no, we want to do it. It's much more like cookie-cutter approach. Like, they mentioned some of the people, and I've forgotten all the names already since I read it, that were in charge of this stuff. Now, one of them was, like, the guy who took Forbes, and, like,
yes.
Forbes used to be a big business magazine.
They run it.
And now anybody who knows who, like, yeah. searches, you end up with a Forbes article. It always has that big flash page before right. you get into the actual article, and it's not really very much to it anymore. Apparently, one of them is the ones, I don't know if they personally invented, but were presided over, like, the invention of, you know, those teaser, you were mentioning the last week, those articles where you click on them, and they just require you to click on, like, 18 different things once you get there. Those slideshow yes. articles where you're like, oh, here's things about these celebrities
the
or something.
The junk
you had mentioned with the
yes,
500.
A couple of hours ago, yeah.
But you click on it, and it, ostensibly, it's not an ad in and of itself. It's like, you know, see these pictures of celebrities, but each time you have to click on something and yes. go to something else, and that just multiplies up their page views, right. which they can sell ads for, you know. Obviously, I take this all with a grain of salt. I don't know, you know, who's right in this stuff. But what the thing that she was saying, which is really an interesting thought about their approach, maybe they don't even think about this consciously, is by simplifying these things and cutting them down, they're counting on the fact you have X, like you mentioned, having more page views. But the alternative is you go, I want as many page views as we have now, but I'm just going to cut the cost to produce them.
Right.
And so, like, what you can do is basically, it's like the mafia movies where you basically, like, bleed out a business. Like, you get yeah. your fingers into it and you're like, well, we're going to take this out. We're going to take this out. And at the yep. end, there'll be nothing left.
Yeah.
And so that's her theory, is that, like, what these folks are doing is they're using the brand, and it's certain, like, I'm going back to Deadspin looking for things. At some point, I'll stop. And what they want me to do is do it until it all stops, and then they can sell off what's left.
That's the thing, though.
I don't know if this is true.
Well, that's the thing, though.
Better theory.
But if you strip it out, how much value is in what's left?
Right. Well, that's
a curious thing with the internet.
Matter, like, if you made enough money in 10 years and you're getting there.
Here's the curious thing, and I may be looking at this completely wrong. You'd use the mafia example of doing that to businesses, but businesses ultimately have, you know, hardware and infrastructure that has an innate value. But of course, in a strange way, a website only has the people that work it. Like, there's not a lot of money to be made in owning that piece of the internet.
Because
we own a piece of the internet.
Oh, no. Yeah, Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like there's not a location issue. Right, there might be a better domain
name. Yeah, and it's not like, yes, we own Drew McGarry. We will sell him to CBS, whatever, for X point whatever million. It is an interesting way of
One of my prior places.
As a way to make money.
Which relied on, you know, the talents of people. Was they basically, the boss would say, the boss of the whole place would say, every day our assets, our capital walks out the door because it's the people, right? Like, and so if the people don't keep coming back to work, you don't have a company more. It's not like buying real estate or owning gold,
yeah,
where you have it and you hold on to it. The people are the thing, and they go out the door every day, and they might decide not to come back the next day. And if your writers all go away, your thing kind of disappears.
Yeah.
But the thought is they can squeeze it. I was trying to tie it into the media thing in my head, the TV stuff. I'm not sure it quite fits yet, it makes me think of particularly the lawsuit stuff of what happened with music streaming. Like, somebody creates Napster, right? And Napster was a centralized system for sharing music. Well, they get sued and they're gone. Now what happens? Well, all the stuff goes the other directions. It gets all diffused, BitTorrent, things like that, where there's nobody to sue anymore. Well, when you look at what's happened to the media, and if the real companies that produce media go away, what replaces them? Well, it's people telling crackpot stories on Facebook and on random like junk places that you can't sue them out of submission because they're just people firing off idiocy.
Bloggers, yes.
Bloggers and you know, Reddit, podcasters, you know, Reddit column, you know, Reddit people columnists. Like, do all these things. And this is where you end up with this weird
hiding behind
this weird business things that say, well, not even hide. They don't have to, because
is that a libertarian?
It doesn't matter whether they're hiding behind free speech. It doesn't matter. You can't stop them. Because there's no central place to sue. Like, and that's why the next suits that are going to come out are going to be against Facebook and Google. But they've all have – or Facebook and Twitter and all those. But they all have, under the most recent laws, immunity for their content.
Yep.
And so, you know, should they? You know, if basically you basically contracted out everything, all your writing, and you don't – you basically say, well, I'm not responsible in the delivery of that. But, you know, I just flip back and forth in terms – so what does that mean for the TV shows, are they going to succeed or fail, or will it all just break apart? And you'll be left with the Reddit of the TV world, where you just got to go find your individual things on your own.
Well, you said that, find your individual things on your own. When I read this article, and it's a long article, it's really well written, a great article. And I'll be fair, when I read it, I'd kind of read on another article on Deadspin that week that this particular writer, editor in chief, was leaving. But I can't say over my years of, and I am a, you know, I go to Deadspin every day, and they're associated websites about topics that I'm interested in. I'd never really noticed her name in a way that gone, yeah, I need to read what she's saying. But she did make a – so she is talking about why she's leaving and how the people that now own Deadspin have a different vision for how the website's making money than how she said. And she had said that she had kept telling them – and this is why I'm going to tie it into TV. She kept telling them that people came to Deadspin because – they didn't just come for sports. They came for other things. And yet she kept being told by the CEO, just stick to sports. Then this is the paragraph I thought was interesting. I'm now quoting Megan Greenwell. When I told them that the data showed that non-sports content brings more traffic and more revenue opportunities, I've been ignored. When I told them that the data shows that readers prefer publications with a distinctive point of view, that Deadspin succeeds precisely because it doesn't try to be all things to all people, I have been told that being all things to all people is in fact exactly the way to grow page views. Now, those two sentences stuck out to me because knowing that we were going to talk about TV, the biggest thing now about streaming TV is that you are in far greater control of what you decide to watch. So you can go, I want to watch Kevin Spacey and the political drama, and I can just watch that nonstop. I don't have to wait till next week. I don't have to sit through the show before for it to come on. I can have it all right there. It's interesting that from this writer's position, the people that own the website are actually saying that's not true. Just give people everything. But what she's saying is actually, no, people go to a site because that's what they want. They don't want some, they don't want to get there and start choosing from this sort of broad church and menu of things. They come to us because they know what we're getting. So I'm going to tie it to this notion of she's kind of correct, because that's how we're watching TV now. We're not sitting through a night of network TV for our show to come on. We are going to whatever source where we can pay and get our show all in a row right now. Because as audience people, as consumers, we're able to now pick exactly what we want.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you, but it was helpful that you mentioned that, because now I do
see, I just thought that was interesting.
Now I do see the connection. But what she's ultimately...
And I tend to agree with her. I go to websites. There's this old saying.
It doesn't line up with your idea.
What do you mean doesn't?
It doesn't line up with your idea that, like, people go and find their own stuff. The point, what she's saying, this is what I'm saying. What she said is right and what you're describing, but I think your conclusion is wrong.
Okay.
What she's saying, and which is probably true, is that people want a curator. They want somebody to take the content and orient it around, and they will find the curator they like the best. And so Deadspin was a curator of articles
at
various different people, right? All these different people. If all those people had blogs, sure, you could go look for it all like you look for TV.
But they're
a curator who they would say, okay, I'm going to read different things, but there'll be some overlapping, I don't want to say consistency, but some overlapping relationship in that I know I'm much more likely to read the next thing I read on Deadspin because I like the first ones, and there's somebody there who's watching it over and going, and that's why I like the fact that it covers politics and I love it, and it covers culture and it covers all these different things tangential to sports, because their point of view and the people, like you said, we talked about the people you might like to hang, you know, the people who are commenting, like there was a consistency to it, and there's a brand, but a curated label to it. Well, if you destroy, like you're, I think
no, I know
comes,
you're saying.
When it comes to the TV shows, sure, maybe, but I don't think NBC curated anything.
What I mean is this, and I think we are having a discussion, and I want to use your great phrase, it is a distinction without a difference. What I'm saying is, this is her point, and I do see it's tied into media. Netflix want you to subscribe because they are offering you something that you've got to pay for, right? Now, I know that we're arguing about different things, but what I'm saying is you have a producer of content trying to get you in the door with one thing. Her point was Deadspin has a point of view. That's what gets people in the door. And they will go, no, just give them everything and then we can get more people here. And
they're like, but that doesn't make, like, give them everything. Giving them everything is not the same as being a simple thing for all people. Like, if their bosses are telling her to simplify and only do sports, they're not telling her to go give everybody everything.
But their attitude was that they wanted a far more neutral.
Right, to be Budweiser instead of some craft beer.
So, and I'm only saying that back in the day, even before cable TV, and we grew up in different countries, but the network battles are the same anywhere. I'm sure when you were a kid, it was the constant battle between ABC, CBS, and NBC to create the night where you watched one show and then you watched all of them.
That's the curated experience.
Right, and that's what I'm saying is all these things are kind of interesting in terms of how we consume stuff. Now, clearly, back in the day with TV, you try to get them in the door because you also knew that they were probably too lazy to then leave the door and change the other channel. Do you know what I mean? And that's...
Yeah, so my point ultimately, if you want to make an analogy, is what she's talking about is a breakdown of the curated experience that will be really interesting to a smaller segment, but actually interesting to them. And you could see that in this diffraction, this breakdown of the streaming system into all different things. I guess to some extent, each one of them has their own little curated, and I shouldn't think Disney's plan is to have a series of curated experiences.
But I do think where the streamers, I think what the streamers are trying to do is create a sense of, HBO got, we've always talked about how HBO is so successful because you can just say, well, that's HBO quality, and that stands for whatever thing. And then for the longest time, all the cable networks, including sort of your non-premium like AMC, were like, we need to do what HBO does, is get one show, and then it can completely...
Sure. Well, AMC and Mad Men, and like right. Various networks have tried this one, and they kind of vacillate between doing
that. I think this might be the struggle for companies such as Netflix in comparison to Disney. The older people like Disney, and even to an extent CBS or whatever NBC doing, might have an inherent advantage because we already have a sense. Are you going to get Disney streaming service? Your answer, yes or no, is going to be based not specifically on the latest show they have now. It's not going to be based on, oh wow, I might get Disney because they've got such and such. You're already predisposed to go, I want Disney or I don't.
I get it.
What I'm saying is the challenge for people like Netflix who don't have. They've come into streaming.
They don't have a brand to go with their curated experience. Yes. So I continue, like, I'm trying to jump in. You're just saying, no. And I'm telling you, I'm about to agree with you and sew up the gap in your analysis there, which is, yes, right. The idea is anything that's got an established brand to some extent can use that brand to promote that curated experience without you needing to find it.
Right.
I mean, I think Disney now is, like, parts of Disney is going to be that because Disney, when we think of Disney, despite the fact of the size of the company, we don't think of ESPN. We don't think of ABC.
No,
we think of the cartoons and the Wild World of Disney and the Funzie movie, you know, and Mary Poppins and all that. So they'll have that part. But they bought Marvel, they bought Star Wars, each of which is
somebody's
brand,
entryway.
It's the point for that brand, will be another, like, so that's why people were, I don't know that they've said anything about it, but I certainly read something, people are speculating that Disney's not going to roll out its streaming experience like, it's Disney, here it all is. It's going to be Disney, and you're in there, and it's this segment, it's Marvel, is this segment, is, you know, I'm using Marvel for something, but it's going to be different areas, you know, of that stuff, so that you can immediately go there, you have, a curated experience, or a consistent experience.
Which is perhaps why Netflix... Again,
and Netflix's brand originally was movies for less than you could get them from Blockbuster, and you didn't have to go out and go to Blockbuster. So they've had to change, and they realized this pretty early on because they were going to lose the rights to these movies. And people realized, like, once the movie studios realized, like, how much money Netflix was making for it, they were like, well, we're not going to give you all those CDs for the same thing when you're making, and you know, original, not DVDs to mail to people. And then when they have a streaming, when they have these other streaming options, when they can just go on your cable system and get paid $5 every time you stream the movie directly from there. So now they've been transitioning to, you know, they transitioned to the Friends. It was the comfort binge watching network, right?
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I think the next transition for them is they lose those shows. Is clearly they are going
their toughest one.
Right? Well, they are clearly going the route of let's get in. In a strange way, they're sitting there going, originally we did movies, we did other people's movies.
Yeah.
Now we do our own movies. So they're going out and they are paying the likes of
comedy. Martin. They did the comedy thing where they basically put a new comedy show out every day for a year.
Yes.
And if you want to see stand-up comedy, Netflix is the place to go do that.
Yes. So that's one.
Medium to big.
That's
people,
one savvy.
Like,
that's one
like
savvy move.
Yeah.
And then the other one is now going, well, heck, we need to get it. It's almost kind of a throwback. They're acting like a movie studio, but movie studios from the 50s where Martin Scorsese just works for us. In the same way that back in 1960s, Steve McQueen only worked for Warners and Clint Eastwood only worked for Fox or whatever it may be. It is almost a throwback to a different time in terms of, well, that's the only way for our brand to survive.
All right. Well, I'm late for dinner now.
Okay. Anyway, we'll link all this stuff on a blog. Take the time to read The Adults in the Room. You sent it to me. It was long, and I'm like, why am I reading this? And I started reading it, and it was just a great article. And
we didn't even talk about the crazy story she had to tell.
But and again, you still get a paper. I don't. I consume everything now through the internet. I read
until
the internet.
Until you run out of your 5 articles per month.
Yeah, it made me think about why I go to different places and how and why I consume what articles and opinion I do.
And I know the answer. It's to provide fodder for the Atlantic Voice podcast.
Which this has been. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at atlanticvoice.net. Email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.